if you look back, really kind of what we've gone through were more simpler attacks.
Malcolm Harkins is the general manager of Intel's Information Risk and Security Group. He says that attacks in the 1980s were more cosmetic than anything else. The motives of many hackers were generally to gain prestige or notoriety to prove that they could break in.
You know, as we got into the mid-90s, we really started seeing a second generation of attack. It was more focused on compute availability because more computers had gotten networked as the advent of personal computing really took hold in the early to mid-90s. And then as the internet and, you know, networking within companies started maturing and people started getting more access both at home and at work and more, you know, systems being networked. Now, what we've kind of started seeing the past couple years as we kind of got into 2004 and, you know, since then from now, again, is more of a third generation of attacks. The motives are much more financially oriented or politically oriented. The target is more at the data. People are looking to steal personal identities. They're looking to gain access in a way that is not intended to be obvious. So things are trying to get subtler. Again, you look back a few years ago, none of us needed a sophisticated intrusion detection system to tell us we had SQL Slammer on the network. You know, your routers were tipping over in seconds to minutes just with the flood of information. You didn't need, some sophisticated detection technologies or prevention technologies, to notice some of those things.
Yeah, it was a malicious practical joke in a sense. Yeah.
In many ways, right. And again, denial of service is still a big deal, and those threat vectors still exist, and the motivations for notoriety still exist. But, you know, you're starting to see, and we've started seeing a lot more of the social engineering over the past couple of years, the phishing exercises, you know, and things moving from email to instant message for that stuff. Starting to see some early signs of malicious code and attack vectors on handhelds and other type of compute devices. And kind of where it's headed, particularly as the different layers of computing, in some cases, have started to get more hardened at an operating system level, you're starting to see more people from an attack vector go at the application layer, the web browser, and they're starting to go beneath the operating system into other embedded software, BIOS and firmware and drivers as attack vectors, as, again, people have put in place better mitigation with more deployment of antivirus and maybe some client firewalls and that type of stuff. So, you know, with added controls in some areas and strengthening of operating systems to have less attack surface, the hackers are going in other directions. They're going up into the application stack and then into the web layers and then down further below the operating system.
And you also have attacks coming in from inside of the company, inside of the network as well.
If you look at the Computer Sciences Institute and FBI surveys, insider attacks are certainly one of the most concerning and most impactful, because if an insider who knows how to get access to stuff, or may actually have already been given authorized access, does something, the potential impact there can be larger, and they may have an easier time getting through defenses.
Do you see a day when this balance, so to speak, because it does feel that we are ahead of the hackers and the virus writers, it seems pretty rare that something really pulls me off the network for any period of time, every once in a while. But do you see this balance shifting at any point?
Well, and again, I think you make an interesting point. I think some people, you can look at it from two perspectives. One is, in some ways, you could argue we're ahead. The other thing, though, when you really dig underneath it, if the motivation for the hackers now is financial, they don't want to be noticed, in which case they're going to be subtler and quieter, in which case you will not be bounced off of the network with a simple denial of service, because that's not where the attack vectors are at. they want you to stay on the network. They want you to not notice that they've compromised the system. So just because we don't feel it doesn't mean it's not, it does exist. It's just at a different layer. You know, and I do think, you know, the maturity of the defenses, the maturity of the attackers will continue to grow. Attackers are using, you know, the same and in some cases better technology to automate what they're doing, be more sophisticated on it, just like we become more sophisticated in our typical office computing, right? They use similar automation to make their attacks more sophisticated, more subtle, and more easier for them to execute.
Let's talk about this idea of being able to now manage the network from just a single point in it, physically speaking. How has that evolved, and where are we now?
Again, I think if you look through kind of the maturity around manageability, I think you go back even in our internal operations, and I think fairly similarly in a lot of companies, you go back 10, 11, 12 years ago, you were really kind of seeing the first evolution of kind of client-server manageability with the ability to do some remote management, some things from a help desk where you could enable a central group to do more centralized service and support versus having to send somebody to do a desk side visit or go into the data center and do something to a server. And I think with things like vPro and our Centrino Pro platforms, we're starting to see more ability to take that to the next level and start, again, maturing it beyond where it's been so that it does become simpler and easier to have that management capability built in and leveraged across your enterprise.
But then wireless comes along, and one of the things we've learned over the past year or so, especially as businesses opt for laptops as kind of the main machine for their workers, is that laptops go places and you can pick up more viruses that way or pick up more threats that way. That must escalate the security challenge when you're trying to manage these things remotely.
It escalates it in many ways. It also mitigates it in many ways. It depends upon how you define the risk profile. And I think in many cases, when I've talked to people in the industry, sometimes they think a little bit too narrowly about the risk of mobility. Again, I've had discussions with folks, whether it be, you know, a desktop environment or a thin compute environment versus a mobile environment. You first need to start with what compute model makes most business sense for you. Then you need to think about, you know, what threats and vulnerabilities exist and how to best mitigate them. You know, in our environment, we're 80%+ mobile, but being mobile does expose us to potentially some other items. Again, people are on and off dirty networks, right? But we've put client security capabilities that we think reasonably mitigate that stuff. We've done a lot of end-user training and awareness to make them aware of things that they need to be conscious of that the technology may not be able to protect them from, like social engineering. The other thing is, if you're in a, let's say, a desktop or in your thin client model, you need to still think of, is your data mobile? If you're allowing people broad internet access or instant messaging or the ability to print or the ability to put stuff on a USB drive or to burn a CD-ROM, your data may still be mobile, even though you're in a compute model that doesn't, you don't think your data's mobile. The other thing is, with mobile computing, and we've seen this in our environment, it has drastically reduced the risk of availability issues. Again, you still have attacks. You still have, you know, physical events that can occur, a power outage. You know, we've had a snowstorm in one location a few years ago in the Pacific Northwest that, you know, more than half of our employees weren't able to get to work. But they were able to work from home. And the business kept running. And, you know, it was because we had that mobile computing. We had, in one of our locations, a pipe break a couple years ago. We lost hardly any computers in a floor that had hundreds of offices. So we didn't have the capital replacement cost. And while that area was getting retrofitted and cleaned up, of the couple hundred people in there's only a dozen systems that were impacted. Everybody else could work from the cafeteria, conference room, home, because that mobility computing allowed for us to manage business continuity and disaster recovery, because we weren't necessarily reliant on a fixed item in a fixed location, that if there was some physical disruption, whether it be, fire, flood, storm, whatever, we were able to manage through it.
In terms of how vPro is changing desktop security and the management of machines, I wonder if you could discuss just the cost structures associated with that.
Yeah, again, it varies depending upon, different people's environment and how they've done certain things. But, when you think of pushing a patch as an example, there's a good portion of costs in, software instrumentation, in, systems, maybe being shut off or, not tethered at the time, or you don't know where they're at and you don't have reach to them because you don't have the management agents on them because maybe your end user took them off or maybe you didn't get them pushed there. With AMT, based technology, we have more embedded capability that an IT organization can turn on to help do some of the asset management, to help in the deployment of patches, in the management of some of those configuration layers that make it simpler and easier to hit more systems with a consistent platform to keep your security up to date. So it is a solid enabling capability that, again, depending upon where some companies are, some people have, gotten some of the way there by deploying, software-only solutions. Some companies haven't deployed any, and the only way in which they patch is they, put up on their equivalent intranet, a notice saying you need to patch. Some do it in other ways. And so, depending upon how a particular company has kind of managed through in that environment and what investments they've put in, their cost structure could vary significantly from something very manual that's cheap that puts them at more security risk because they can't, deploy patches or make those configuration changes, in the course of hours, it's days to weeks, to, again, if they've invested in some of the software-only capability, they can probably deploy that stuff in hours to days. With AMT, you can get, much faster, much broader reach, and again, if the system's off, you can wake it up and still get the system patched. So, again, it's a more cost-effective and an ability to get a broader reach across your company.
And finally, this question, Malcolm, about best practices. Do you have any insights into what those would be?
Yeah, again, I think, best practices, that we've tried to adopt and everything around security overall and with respect to remote management of security is the more automation you can put in to enable the quick distribution and real-time tuning of your security settings in your environment, the better you'll be able to adapt, respond, and react to events that will occur. The move of threat vectors to be more subtle, the move of them to be more zero-day oriented, where you're not, having, days to weeks to, patch stuff, is happening. And having that automation and that capability will definitely allow you to manage not only the cost of deployment and management of that security infrastructure, but because you can mitigate more quickly, even if it's a zero-day stuff, the impact, you've reduced the overall total cost to the company on both sides of that equation, both the impact of an event happened and the preventative controls and how much those cost.
Malcolm Harkins is the General Manager of Intel's Information Risk and Security Group. I'm Jason Lopez for PodTech.net.